My name's Jamie Bullock. I'm a senior researcher from Birmingham Conservatoire in the UK. And this is Dan Beattie. He's a user experience freelance user experience architect. And together we worked together on a piece of software which was developed under the Integra project. What we're going to do is I'm going to just talk briefly about the project itself, give a bit of context about the Integra project. I'm going to talk about the methodology we went through to develop this software. And then I'm going to actually demo the software and talk through the user interface, and then we'll have any questions at the end. So basically, Integra is a three-year project funded by the European Union, and it brings together research centres, composers and performers and across Europe. And the idea is that we spend 12 months developing a new piece of software for live electronics, live electronic music. And then that is then used by five composers who are commissioned to write a new piece, 20 minutes in length, for Sinfonietta-style ensemble, so about 10 to 15 players, plus live electronics, plus one other media component, such as dance or video. And then the commissioned works are then performed by the new music ensembles who are partnering in the project as well. And each piece has to be performed twice by different new music ensembles. So that's all over the course of 3 years. The research centres involved were ourselves, Birmingham Conservatoire, NOTAM from Norway, and IEM from Austria. Now, what this gives us really is a number of things. It gives us a software development project which has to be completed in a certain amount of time. There's also a built-in requirement for the software to work and to be usable within the project. It's simply not an option for us to produce something which is not stable or not usable or not user-friendly. And what we wanted to do really with this software is create something which was suitable for composers and performers with little or no experience with music technology, so that the software could be used directly by them without the traditional assistance or intervention of a musical assistant. So we're seeking to really empower performers and composers from conservatoire-type backgrounds or performing new music ensemble backgrounds to actually work directly with technology, which they currently don't do, largely due to technical difficulties or lack of training. So in order to achieve this goal, we've really placed the emphasis on the user interface design in the software. And we've embedded, we've embedded user testing and user evaluation right through the entire development process. So we started off with some questionnaires, some user interviews to get a flavour of what people wanted, and we then conducted hallway testing. Hallway testing is when you're coding away in your lab or working on some research, and then you just grab a potential real life user, give them the software, ask them questions about it. Do you like this feature? Do you not like this? So it's ad hoc testing, basically. So we did this, and we also did some formal lab tests. But also, the critical thing for us is not just the fact that we tested with real users, but also from the outset we involved professional designers in the process. And I'd just like to take a really, really brief show of hands, actually. If you just raise your hands if you actually do currently involve professional designers in your research or your software development processes in working on new interfaces. So a few people. So I would argue that that's not enough. If we're working in developing new interfaces for musical expression, really we should start using the services and collaborating with professional designers. So now what I'm going to do is actually talk through, so the process we've been through, I'm going to talk through now the key features of the software. And I think rather than just show you slides, I'm actually going to fire up the software and just talk through the interface. So I need to switch this over now to mirrored. There we go. So this is basically what was important to us really, is not just to create a good interface, but to create a good complete user experience, so that we had a good online web presence. It was downloadable, single point of download, double clickable, executable on the desktop, and you were away to go. There was no compiling anything or downloading extra stuff. So this is what you get when you download. When we started this process, we looked at what we needed to do, which was commission, composition, and performance, and we looked at the process that people go through when they work on that. And basically, this usually goes through two phases, a sort of composition, arrangement, experimentation stage, and then rehearsal and performance. And so we embedded this kind of paradigm deeply in the software. So we've got two views here, an arrange view, which is where composers try out ideas, arrange their work in time, place musical interactions, and then a live view, which is where we spend our time in live performance and do real-time control. So I'm just going to talk briefly through the arrange view. We've got these concepts called blocks, which can be added in the arrange view. And these represent musical interaction. So these represent, each block represents a kind of individual musical interaction which happens within a piece. It could be anything, it could be a piece of processing, it could be some real-time control over processing. And go inside each block, and we can add modules, processing modules, onto a canvas inside the block. And the software comes pre-configured with a reasonably extensive library of modules. And basically we've looked at the kind of standard things that people would need for live electronics and tailored it towards that. So the software's quite light on kind of low-level, sorts of low-level operations you'd see in something like Max, and more focused on high-level processing. So I'm just going to add a sound file player module here. And you'll notice underneath, immediately I get the controls for that module. So I don't have to load the module, then put some controls on, and then connect up the controls. They're just already there. And we try to keep the number of controls per module down to a minimum. And load a sound. And if I just connect this out now to my output, and just take the level down slightly, hit play. Hello. Oh, it's it's not what you want when you're demoing your live software. It's a slight delay of the audio. I'll just give that a bit of a loop there. So I've got the controls there. And what I can do now is I can get another module and drop that in line with that. So I'm going to put something like a resonant low-pass filter there. And I can drop that directly in line. And I don't need to reconnect. I can just drop it straight in the signal path. And I'm already here now, and I already feel after a couple of seconds like I'm doing something a bit interesting and creative. Okay, so I'm going to stop that looping. Now, you might have noticed there, I'm having to click on each module to actually access its attributes and control them. And this is where the live view comes into play. If I want to actually have a couple of things available simultaneously, I can add them to the live view by selecting this checkbox here. So if I select that play function, the loop function, and, well, maybe I want to control the frequency of the low-pass filter, you notice now they appear in the live view, ready to be controlled, and I can actually control them there straight off play. And control it there, which is fine. And I can put as many of these on as I want, and if I have multiple blocks, they'll appear below on the different tracks and so on. Another thing I might want to do now is actually say, well, that's okay, I can control that live with the mouse, but what I want to do is have some kind of gesture that I kind of trigger at an arbitrary point. So I can actually go back now into the arrange view and add envelopes to the blocks. And so what this enables is for the envelope to be played back over time. So here, I'm going to click on block one to select it, get the block properties underneath, select the module I want to control, and the attribute I want to control, which is frequency. And then you see I get a blue line there in the block, which is the envelope for that particular attribute. So if I just put something in there like that, if I then set this sound file looping again, and hit play in the timeline, you'll see the frequency gets modulated. And goes up according to the envelope. Okay, so we've got two types of control there. We've got kind of synchronous control, which is controlled by a timeline which progresses forward, and we've got asynchronous control from the mouse. We can also get control from external sources if we want, from MIDI and so on. What I'm going to talk about now is actually the approach to musical time here, because music's really about what we do in time. And it's quite unusual in live electronics to have a situation where the composer organises their musical ideas very strictly according to absolute time, and then just simply plays through and hits play, and the piece goes through 10 minutes and it just moves forward like that. So what we've actually got is another level on top of this, which is scenes, which enables us to move to arbitrary points in time, jump backwards and forwards between them, have some of the scenes playing, looping, or static. So what I'm going to do now is just hand over to Dan, and Dan's just going to talk for a couple of minutes about the kind of inspiration behind this kind of approach to time, if that's okay.
Hi. I guess the idea from this came out of both working as a software designer and also as an electronic improviser. And I often found that the problem with using live electronics, well, in a live context, was that I wanted to instantly be able to change from any one thing to any other thing, and that none of the existing software that was out there would allow me to do this in a flexible way. The other thing that I realized was that every laptop or every device has a keyboard, so that is the one interface you can guarantee to have, that everybody will actually have, and that lots of people were developing flexible interfaces that were external to the laptop and using that to control the software, but actually you couldn't guarantee that anyone would have any one of these interfaces. So we wanted to make a product that everybody could use straight out of the box, that was flexible in regards to time, and that was would enable people to improvise in real time with other players and be able to react to what they were doing in real time. So essentially we have a set of presets that can last for, well, they can either play through time or they can just stop, and then you can improvise with that preset. And then you can switch very quickly from one to the other by using the keyboard controls here. So here you would have, you would assign a scene to a key, or the scenes would be automatically assigned to a key. And then I could just switch between those scenes just by hitting the keyboard. So if for example, I wanted to go over a section we just played again, I would just immediately be able to do that without having to think. I would just know that that was assigned to that particular thing. So if we're working with people who play acoustic instruments or other flexible instruments where you can they can instantly start playing something else, this was really the key to making this software work.
Okay. So finally, what I'm going to talk about really is the results really of this as a research process. We're currently in the Integral project, and it finishes this year. We're now at the point where lots of the composers have finished their pieces or are working on their pieces, and they're getting performed. And we had a concert a couple of weeks ago in Valencia, performance of a piece by Hilda Predes, performed by Group Instrumental. And the software was used in the performance for the first time, and everything worked as it was supposed to, which was good. And we'd given the composer the software to use, and she'd actually worked with the software pretty much on her own with a little bit of input from us. But what we kind of found from doing that is that we've created a very simple and easy to use piece of software, and actually what resulted from that first commission was actually some very simple live electronics. So the challenge we're looking at now is actually trying to go beyond a simple piece of software that enables you to do simple things to getting it so that composers intuitively do more complex or more musically advanced things. And that comes down to other issues, not just software design, but probably education and so on. So there's a lot of work still to be done on that. But we've had good feedback so far and people are using it. So yeah, any questions? And there's a project website.
I see a question up there.
George Esley, University of Michigan, very nice presentation. I was very impressed that you got away with basically the typing and nice icons, lots of clicking. And you kind of mentioned that, that's something you wanted to do. Now, it seems like you're doing this for the device where you do have a keyboard, but I'm worrying about mobile devices where you don't even want to type, even if you could. Have you worried about how this translates when your primary input is multi-touch rather than the mouse?
I think Dan can answer that.
Clearly, it doesn't translate at all if you're using a multi-touch device and you want a different interface for controlling the scenes. The keyboard is quite good because it's recognizable, and you can think, oh yeah, T, I assigned that to this. So it's a good way of making a mnemonic for a particular thing. But if you were going to translate this to a multi-touch device, you'd have to reconsider every kind of interaction on it, at least in terms of the scene management stuff.
Are you planning to go that direction, or?
That would be great. Yeah. We'd really like to do that, but yeah.
There was another question up there. Yes, and one more.
Hi, Nicolas D'Alessandro from University of British Columbia. Your software is actually surprisingly close to one called Audio Mulch, and I would like to know where did you locate yourself compared to this one?
Yeah, that's a good question. Some of the software like Audio Mulch and Bidual was kind of inspiring to us in developing this. One of the key differences is the approach to time. I think Audio Mulch has a slightly different paradigm, and I think with Audio Mulch, the kind of module graph is kind of at the front of the interface, and we've kind of pushed that audio graph to the back. So what we want to do is make an interface where the user spend as little time as possible adding modules and connecting them up, and as much time as possible organizing them in time, adding control, and so on. So that's a kind of nuanced difference. And I think another difference is in the underlying framework, really. Some of the things I didn't touch on in the talk is that in Integral Live, you can actually write your own modules in Pure Data. It's completely open source, so there's a kind of slightly different emphasis in the kind of underlying framework as well there.
Thank you.
I will take the last question.
Elliot Britton, McGill University. It looks really exciting, but I was just wondering how I would be able to queue maybe 60 events within a long piece across the keyboard.
Yeah, that's an item that's on our tracker at the moment, actually, because obviously at the moment the number of scenes you can have is limited to the number of key bindings that you've got on the keyboard. And we're not sure how to solve it at the moment. We're aware of it as an issue and a problem. Having said that, nobody's actually devised a piece yet which does have more than that many scenes. But it's sure that somebody's going to at some point want to do that. Suggestions welcome.
Okay. Let's thank the speakers once more.